Welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Before we speak to our guest, Jeremy Hahn, I wanted to let our Chicago listeners know about a Chicago Minicon going on Saturday, October 14th at Dark Tower Comics, 4835 Northwestern Avenue in the Lincoln Square neighborhood. It's from 2 to 5 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, featuring creator signings with artists and writers like Bill Reinhold, Andrew Peepoy, Tim Seeley, Steve Bryant, Francesco, Mike Oliveri, Len Cody, Dave Wachter, Rafael Nieves, and Doug Clauba. Make sure you join us. It's for 3 hours from 2 to 5 p.m. at Dark Tower Comics, 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago in the Lincoln Square neighborhood. But now let's talk with Jeremy Hahn. Jeremy may be best known for his collaborations with writer B. Clay Moore on projects like the Image World War II superhero miniseries, Battle Hymn, and The Leading Man from Oni Books, optioned by Universal Studios this past summer. But Jeremy's had other successes, leading to an upcoming Marvel one-shot with Law & Order writer Christos Gage, a Civil War tie-in called Captain America and Iron Man. But first, we'll start with a look at Jeremy's artistic beginnings. Where'd you go to college, man?
Well, I did some college. It's this little rinky-dink thing called Missouri Southern State University. It actually became a university after I left, but it was interesting.
Did you have any other formal training?
I just did some college. I mean, I took, you know, art classes in high school, and then, you know, of course, took art classes, life drawing and stuff like that in college.
Hell, you are talented.
I don't know about that.
What was your first work in comics?
The first real official thing that we did was a book called Paradigm. It was something that I did with Matt Cashel. He's actually a local guy here, lives, you know, 30 minutes away. We originally self-published that through this little rinky-dink company called Two Irish Guys Press, and met Jim Valentino at Kansas City at the Planet Comic Con there, handed a copy of that off to him, and shortly thereafter got contacted by him saying, you guys want to bring this here? And, you know, we jumped at the chance. We did 12 black and white issues, and then we stopped.
Was it ever traded?
Actually, the first first few issues are.
Okay.
I think it's actually impossible to get now. It ended up selling out, you know, after a couple of years. It was honestly a strange story about this town where the walls of reality start to thin and crazy stuff starts to come through. It's just about this group of people that kind of get thrown into these strange situations. We like to call it a psychodrama.
So what led to your pairing up with Clay Moore?
Shortly after Paradigm was finished, Clay and I, we met in Kansas City and actually at the same convention that we got Paradigm going. We met Clay and talked with him and kind of became friends, realized we knew some similar people. We just, you know, kind of hit it off, and then later, after we finished Paradigm, we traveled to Texas together for Wizard World Texas.
Okay.
And just had a great time talking on the way down, and he was asking me what I was, you know, kind of planning when I finished with Paradigm, and I really wasn't sure, and so we started shooting things back and forth, and he had this thing, Battle Hymn, that he was kind of telling me about, and he had an artist that was attached, but things had kind of gone wrong with scheduling and everything, so he wanted to know what I thought of it, and I think probably I was the one that was like, let me do it, please, because it was just a great concept, you know, it was an era that I love. It was, you know, superheroes, which really weren't superheroes. It was just kind of all the things that I really wanted to move into and do, especially after doing something so claustrophobic as Paradigm. I really kind of wanted to open things up a little bit and kind of do something that was not quite so myopic.
You guys really captured the World War II motif, and I think there were a lot of interesting visual choices that you made to mimic kind of the Life magazine kind of coverage of these World War II heroes that were put together more for public relations than actual protection.
With Battle Hymn, a lot of what we were trying to do was get the time and the feel and yet still tell a comic book story. I mean, I do a ton of research. I looked at a lot of Life magazine. I looked at a lot of Saturday Evening Post things that, you know, to kind of get like an iconic feel, especially for the covers and things like mm-hmm. that, you know, try to replicate some of the wartime magazine covers and stuff. And then we just had fun with it and just kind of set everything aside that we did the research on and went from there.
What I liked, too, was, you really had your own style. You didn't try and ape a 40s style. It's funny, when I talked to Clay about Battle Hymn, I think similarities to the Invaders are pretty apparent. And I guess back then they were called the All-Winner Squad. You know, the Invaders was kind of an invention of Roy Thomas. But, there were hints of Marvel characters, I think, in some of those icons. But the great thing was it really did look like a modern comic as well.
Well, the thing about it is I just can't do that. I'm not that good. trying to do Severn or Robbins, or trying to go for even a more classic style, trying to do Wood or somebody like that, or even going the opposite direction and going into more of like a Lydecker or a Rockwell kind of thing. It's just something that I couldn't even process. I had to kind of do it just the only way I knew how.
Sure.
And make it work, and so that's what I was left with.
Do you feel your style has changed? Because I think there's a line, obviously, there. But I would say that the look of another book that I want to talk about, Desperados, is a bit different from Battle Hymn. It seems like there was a lot more photorealism in Desperados, and that Battle Hymn really was more a freehand approach by you.
It's kind of, I hope there's been some sort of progression all along. I think with each project that I work on, I try to bring something new to it, and I try to learn from it. I think that it's kind of interesting. Desperados was actually done during the time the Battle Hymn was done.
Okay.
It was something that IDW offered me, and we were kind of slow getting out of the gate on Battle Hymn, so. Because I'm an idiot, I thought I could do two books at once, and basically kind of was running those at the same time. And it ended up Battle Hymn kind of suffered for it, and maybe both books, artistically kind of suffered a little bit. But
wow, because I enjoyed both of them, and I think Desperados was really great. I think it's funny, you look at Loveless now and Jonah Hex and the success that DC is having. And I think that Jeff Marriott, in all of his Desperado stories, has really had a good gritty Western kind of dipping under the radar. But your trade, the Bands of Gold trade, was like the first time that I was aware of Desperados. I ended up going back, and we mentioned John Severin before. He was one of Jeff Marriott's collaborators.
Oh yeah, all of the Johns that worked on.
Yeah.
I was the first one to kind of break that trend. But,
yes, and John Cassaday being the first
Cassaday,
guy.
It had John Lucas. It had John Severin.
Wow, I forgot about John Lucas. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, really, really, just three wonderful, wonderful miniseries. It was kind of a tough act to follow, honestly. But.
Well, I thought it was neat. Now, getting to know some of the Kansas City comic book guys, as I have in the last couple conventions, it's fun to see when talking to guys like Seth Peck, to find out that, that's me. Even more so that I guess one of the characters is Seth's ex-wife.
Yeah, great. We're talking about that, aren't we? No, he's gonna kill me after. I typically, use as much photo reference as I need to kind of get something going. Yeah, a lot of times my good friends and family end up kind of getting sucked into the book I'm doing. I'm like, you couldn't be. And then I end up using my brother or my wife or someone for various characters. And actually Seth was the lead in Desperados.
Oh wow. Are there other cameos of other comic creators that we would know of in some of your work?
Let me think. Not really. I mean, mostly it's just easily accessible people, I guess you could say.
Sure.
It's kind of hard to yank, Clay down or something like that. But
yeah, I was wondering if Clay was going to pop up anywhere.
Oh God, he's so ugly though.
Have you watched? And I know we've discussed it on the image boards. And Clay's the guy who started this subject. But that Life on Mars, that BBC America show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really think that the chief inspector on that show really does look like Clay.
Well, we won't get into who I think he looks like, but because it might be a character from Back to the Future. But
that's true too. Yes. Poor Clay.
No,
he is Biff. You're right.
he's so much more handsome than I am. So I guess I better shut up. But no. Life on Mars is a great show. Yeah. Absolutely.
Did you like it?
Yeah. Unfortunately, my experience with it was I think I saw the first two episodes. Clay brought him over one night to Seth's house when Tony Moore and his girlfriend Kara were visiting. We all sat down and basically he got us hooked and then was like, "Yeah, I don't have the other ones here, so sorry."
So you haven't seen it since?
No.
Oh my God!
I need to go ahead and just get it.
You could borrow my tape next time I see you. I promise.
Absolutely. That'd be wonderful.
Tell me about the group of guys, because it's cool how you guys are all really from that same area and collaborating, and there's a lot of talent in your circle of friends.
Well, we like to think so. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting group. It's kind of Kansas City centric. Really, it's basically our group consists of Clay Moore, Tony Moore, Seth Peck, Jason Latour, who is a wanderer. He was in Kansas City for a little while. He's now he's actually in New York. He's kind of bouncing around here.
Oh, no kidding.
But and then me, and also Jason Aaron.
Okay.
The writer. He's working on a couple of Vertigo projects right now. Is kind of an official member of our group too. And then I mean it even goes beyond our close knit circle. I mean, we've got Andy Parks.
Sure.
We've got Matt Fraction, who's doing some amazing stuff right now with Casanova, and from what I'm hearing, he's going to be doing some great stuff on Punisher War Journal. So you know, just it's Kansas City is a crazy group.
That's really cool, and I'm glad to see you guys hang together and stuff. It was fun seeing everybody in San Diego and also Chicago.
Well, the nice thing about it is you get to be friends with people and start a small group, and we're actually making more of a virtual studio, and we're kind of going under kind of that official banner, traveling together and doing even more close-knit stuff in the future. So that's kind of exciting.
Are you guys going to be going to what other conventions are you going to this fall and winter?
There's a small Kansas City show in October, the MoCan show.
Okay.
That I know that we're all going to hit. I think I'm going to hit Wizard World Dallas.
Very cool.
Wizard World Texas. And that's probably it for me for a little while. It's just, I really need to get work done. So this summer was really rough on me. I mean, there's nothing quite like realizing that you've lost a month. Because, it's really hard to, sit down at the drawing table and put the hours in whenever you get home, you rest up, and you go to the next show. It's been tough.
I understand. And are you able, have you tried to draw on the road? I talked to Kylene Doran about that, and she's at a very comfortable point now where she's able to do it. And she says, it is easy for her. She knows how to do it and kind of put in a little bit of time while she's on the road.
You go to a show, you sketch all day.
That's true.
I'm notorious for at the end of the show having to take one or two sketches, back to the room with me every night. I find it impossible to take the time out to work on pages while I'm there. I'm just not good at it. I guess I'm not disciplined enough.
I think you represent the average. Maybe Colleen's more the exception.
Yeah, she's really wonderful at what she does, and I think that that's something eventually I would like to be able to do, but I just don't see how it's possible.
Let's talk about The Leading Man. I mean, this is your second book with Clay, and am I right?
Actually, no, that's the third.
Okay.
Yeah.
What am I missing? Battle Him?
Battle Him, and then we did, for Devil's Due, we did Special Missions Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
Shame
yeah.
on me?
Yeah, no.
That's right. I'd like to talk about that as well, but let's talk about Leading Man first.
Okay, great.
And tell me about the creation of it.
Leading Man actually started with a conversation my younger brother and I were having up in my room. I work late at night, and he was on the night shift, so we were watching through some movies and stuff, and it just kind of started out as one of those conversations where, you know, what if kind of things. And we started talking about the idea that actors, you know, being an actor, it would be a wonderful cover for being a spy, you know, because you go to all these exciting places, you travel here and there, you've kind of got all these interesting skill sets, you know, you learn to shoot guns, you know, you can kind of use that as an excuse. You've got makeup artists around you. You've got, you know, bodyguards. Just everything. You know, and we were like, this is kind of has the makings for a good story. And so, you know, he went home, and I sat there, and I was like, this is kind of a cool idea. So I kept kind of expanding on the idea, and then eventually I talked to Clay about it, and he kind of molded over for a little while. Then we talked about it a couple more times and decided that, you know, we should give it a try. Shortly thereafter, we spoke with Oni, who we both wanted to work with. We, you know, kind of been, both of us have been talking for quite some time about, you know, trying to do something with them. Clay shared the idea with James Lucas Jones,
mm-hmm.
and they just kind of flipped for it, and they said, you know, let's do it.
Now, we're 3 issues in so far, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually done with the book.
Okay.
I finished issue 5, I guess it was, let's see, on the 16th I finished.
Okay, that's great. You know, we did mention it in San Diego, and the fact that Leading Man got optioned by Universal. Congratulations to you and Clay.
Well, thank you.
And what status is the film currently in right now?
You know, it's still early on. It's just in the beginning. I think they are actively looking for writers for the project, and Oni is very excited about it. We're very excited about it. Oni, the Universal, is very excited about it. So
the producer is someone who I know. He did the Legally Blonde films. What else did he do?
Actually, I can't think of anything right offhand. The Legally Blonde stuff. He's done a couple other things.
Those are big hits, obviously.
But you know, he's done some hit movies. I don't know if he's really if they've been quite in the vein of what we're doing on The Leading Man, but, you know, everybody kind of branches out from time to time.
Oh, God, look at Tim Story. Tim Story went from the Barbershop movies to Fantastic Four.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we'll keep watch on that and get more updates from you and Clay as projects happen.
Yeah.
Before we get to what's filling your plate right now, let's talk very briefly about The Devil's Due, G.I. Joe Special Forces. What was that like working? What kind of restrictions, and maybe it starts more with Clay because he writes the script, but, you know, was there any type of check from Hasbro or any other quality control in terms of what you could and couldn't do in the book?
I think one thing that we had kind of going for us from the beginning was that we understood what kind of a story we were dealing with. It wasn't like we were wanting to tell a graphic, you know, violent story or anything like that. So we had realistic expectations and a realistic understanding of what a G.I. Joe story is going into it. So there honestly were very, very few changes. You know, we weren't drawing guys' heads exploding or anything, you know, just really out of the ordinary. We managed to, you know, just go in and tell our story the way we wanted to, and Devil's Due was very, very supportive of it, and in turn, you know, it went pretty smoothly.
That's cool. What was the story about?
Basically, it was about, we kind of wanted to deal with it with a short period of time. The biggest thing that you run into whenever you're doing, you know, a single one-shot issue that's not set with the major characters is how do you deal with getting as much information as you can in a shorter period of time. So we decided that we were going to deal with a group of characters that had to go in kind of under the radar into Manhattan and stop a toxin from being released in a building that used to be run by Cobra. You know, it had kind of a terrorist angle sort of thing. And basically it's just these characters getting through this building as quickly as possible. You know, trying to neutralize the problem.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about what currently occupies your time. A nice Civil War one-shot tie-in, and it's Captain America and Iron Man?
Yeah.
How did you get the gig?
Luck. somebody's got to be looking out for me. I was finishing up Leading Man, and I had been having these conversations with Clay about me kind of freaking out, going, I don't know, what am I going to work on next? I got to have the next thing set up, you know, and he's just like, calm down, you're going to be fine, something's going to come up, just don't worry about it. Con season came around, and in Chicago, my ONI editor, James, had given out a couple of copies of Leading Man, and a copy of The Leading Man ended up in Andy Schmidt's hands, and he apparently liked what he saw, and after I got back from Chicago, he contacted me and said that he had something in mind and wanted to know if I wanted to discuss things, and we did, and hit it off pretty well, and next thing you know, I'm drawing Captain America.
That's really cool. Is Cap one of your favorites as far as Marvel?
Yeah. He's. I mean, I tend to kind of focus on slightly darker characters. I mean, if I had to, you know, go with a favorite, I'd say probably Daredevil. But
okay.
But Cap's consistently been a favorite of mine. He's kind of one of those mainstays that, you know, you kind of go back to and love. And I've been pretty obsessed with Brubaker's run.
Pretty amazing.
It's keeping me going, and it's just been a wonderful book. And so, given how much I've been enjoying that, you know, whenever he said Cap and Iron Man, I'm like, okay.
And were you able to talk to any of the other guys that have been drawing Cap lately? Any like Steve Epting or Mike Perkins? Mike was at that Chicago convention as well. I got a chance to talk to him.
I would love to have had the chance to talk to some of those guys just to pick their brains a little bit. Honestly, especially at conventions, I end up sitting at my table and being stuck there, and you know, finding time to get to the bathroom is sometimes a chore. So, I actually haven't had the opportunity to talk to any of those guys at all.
Are there favorite Cap artists on your part that you really enjoy through the years?
You know, Epting is wonderful. I really enjoyed Cassidy's run. I thought he did a great job with it. I liked what he did with the plate mail kind of, or not plate mail, I guess it's scale, isn't it?
That chain, yeah, that kind of chain mail almost, yeah. Look.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, and then, I was thinking back the other day about how much I enjoyed Ron Garney whenever he was drawing Cassidy.
You bet, absolutely, especially with Wade.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I mean, you can keep going back, and there's just consistently wonderful people that have worked, but, you know, the more recent ones, you know, kind of, that I've been looking at, you know, I mean, Epting did a wonderful job.
Is there more action, you think, in this story than what you've done before?
Yes, I'd have to say so. I think that The Leading Man has quite a bit of action. It's a different kind of action.
It is.
It's definitely a different kind of action than we dealt with in Battle Hymn. Battle Hymn was so much based on the idea that you've got a group that you got a group of characters that never really get to act out, you know, and
yeah, they're grounded. They're more realistic, and even
right,
and
right.
And both of those examples, and I'd include Desperados as well in that.
Right, you know, but you deal with Captain America and Iron Man and Marvel characters, that whole world, you know, especially given the current climate of Civil War, I think that it's about characters in these extreme situations being forced to act. Or, you know, sometimes just acting and thinking later. And
go ahead.
Oh, I don't know.
How far into the fold do they let you into the circle? I mean, do you know what's going to happen? The book is coming out in December, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so it'll be around the time of issue 5 or 6?
Oh, gee, I think it'll be around 6 or
okay.
7, somewhere in there. I mean,
okay.
It's pretty close to the end of the whole Civil War thing.
I see. And I mean, how much do they let you in on the story to inform what you're going to do for the one-shot?
I mean, I the interesting thing about this is it deals a lot with Cap and Iron Man and that last, you know, that last kind of dealing between the two. I mean, you know, it's
in issue four.
It's you know, one last try to have a ceasefire. You know, one last moment.
I see.
Between these two characters, you know, it's the talk. You know, it's the. I mean, everybody's had a best friend in their life where they've, you know, they've had to have that conversation, that last moment where you realize, you know, we either have to fix this or we're not going to be friends anymore, and that's kind of the feel that this has.
Wow.
To answer your question, I know as much as I need to. I think.
Okay.
I'm a really big fan of what's going on right now in the series. Issue four kind of blew me away. So. Honestly, I don't know if I want to know too much. I mean, I know as much as I need to know for what's going on, but beyond that, I'd prefer to be kept in the dark as much as possible.
Sure. No, I'm enjoying the story, too. I think it's interesting that it seems like Marvel is really kind of taking a chance, and things aren't going to be the reset button is not going to be pushed after issue 7. Going to be some lasting problems that I hope will take years to solve.
Well, the interesting thing about it is, you know, especially, I mean, the way I'm left feeling is like there are certain things where I'm just like, no, don't do that. No, you did. Okay, you did. Jerk, you know, but I think a good storyteller is going to piss people off from time to time. I mean, you know, the whole big reveal in number two, you know, I think it had to happen, you know, and as much as I hate that idea, as much as it completely throws the entire Spider-Man thing out of whack, it's definitely a change, and, you know, more power to him, I guess.
Tell me about Chris Gage. He is the writer of the story. I've admired his work from afar, and really enjoyed that first issue of Union Jack that just came out as well.
You know, I picked it up, and I haven't read it yet. I feel like an ass.
And I liked his DC work as well. His Deadshot stuff was really cool.
See, once again, I have a stack like you would not believe of stuff right now.
Do you at least watch Law and Order?
No, but I did pick up the Deadshot stuff, pick up the Union Jack, and I can say this that without any doubt in my mind. This Cap Iron Man thing was one of the best scripts I've read in a long time.
I mean, that's cool.
You know, I've been very, very fortunate with the writers I've worked with. Chris Gage is no different at all. It really, you know, really got me in all the spots that it should have. So it's just a great story.
Are you in contact with him as you're drawing? I mean,
yeah. Actually, you know, we've had a couple of email conversations, and it's been great. You know, he's very helpful, and the cool thing about it is he's very, very obviously a fan. I mean, you know, you hear a TV guy or you hear a movie guy sometimes, and you start to get nervous, you know, but not with Chris. His knowledge, you know, is pretty wonderful. All of the moments that he's kind of hitting on in this story, you know, he really knows what he's doing, and it's great.
How closely did you work with, I know obviously you work very closely with Clay, and you see him all the time, and you guys talk all the time. What about Jeff Marriott, for example?
Jeff was available whenever I needed him. He just turned in these really polished research scripts, and, you know, if I needed him, he was there. But honestly, it was exceptionally clear all the way through it. It was, like I said, I've been really fortunate with all of the writers that I've worked with. You know, they've had an ability to kind of stick me right in the middle of something, and I can kind of instantly see what they're going for, at least hopefully. I hope they feel like that whenever I'm done.
And let me ask you about another IDW project, and that's the Masters of Horror series. Joe Lansdale script?
It was actually based on an original story by Joe Lansdale. Don Coscarelli, I think, did the teleplay. And then Chris Ryle actually did the official adaptation.
Oh, okay. Tell me about writing with Chris.
It was, you know, once again, like I keep going back to this. I'm starting to sound like I really like these guys or something. But it was just a great experience. You know, it was kind of interesting because when you think about adapting a TV show or a movie or something like that, typically, I think people get to see what they're working on beforehand, and just because of the process and where they were at and everything, I didn't get to see the episode before I drew it. I had, you know, a few photographs from the set of the characters and of the house and different things like that, but I kind of had to just take it from there and run with it. So, you know, Chris, whenever we were working on it, he really just kind of put me in a place where I understood what was going on. He described each of the characters, and he kind of made sure that beyond the reference that I was giving, that I could really understand, you know, the settings and everything and kind of the feel that the show gave. Because, I mean, the last thing you want to do is adapt something and have people go, okay, that's nothing like the show, and it sucks.
Right, of course.
You know, but at the same time, I think, honestly, having not seen the show, I was given the opportunity to do something where there were probably a couple of moments that I expanded on a slightly different way, so it was told in such a way that I think people could see the show and then enjoy the book still.
That's cool, and it's funny, when I talked to Chuck Dixon earlier this summer about Hollywood adaptations in general, and some of the books that he worked on that never even made it, they sounded like interesting choices for the artists, and I think we've come a long way from those, you know, Gold Key and Dell TV adaptations.
Right.
You know, and really, you know, it's good to have an ambitious artist on there to kind of give a different spin in the comic book than what you got in the TV show.
I think you just have to, you know, try to keep it in mind, but then, especially in instances where you don't know what the material's like, you have to be willing to just kind of take it and run with it and, you know, try to stay as true to the source material as you can, but then realize that it is a story. I mean, you know, no matter what, the comic book can never be the TV show. And just in the same way that a movie can never be the comic book it's based on or the novel it's based on,
mm-hmm.
you have to kind of separate those two things and just do what you can with what you're given.
Did you ever see, I remember Wizard did a special, and I think they were talking about, you know, different things that should be comics. It was comic artists that should work on, like, famous properties and stuff, and it went from like J. Scott Campbell doing a Britney Spears thing to my personal favorite, which was Cassaday doing The Sopranos, and he had this one piece in Wizard, and it just looked fantastic, and it's like, God, you know, I wish DC and HBO would get together and really, you know, do a good Sopranos miniseries.
I didn't see that. I would have loved to.
It's pretty cool, you know, and it's actually, when I was talking to Azarel recently too, we were talking about Loveless, and, you know, it's like, wow, why isn't there a Deadwood comic? But then again, it's, you know, Loveless is such an interesting book in its own right that it's I'm glad the two can exist and enjoy the differences of both.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting, and I think you have to be careful with doing, you know, comics made from movies. I mean, or TV shows or just whatever. I think that, you know, there are times when when it can be really horrible, and then there's times when it can expand on things and it can just be a wonderful experience. You know, there definitely have been just, you know, absolutely tons of
crappy ones. I'll say it.
Exactly. Yeah, why don't we just call a spade a spade? Yeah, there have been some really rough ones out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but at the same time, there have been some, you know, there's been some stuff that's just amazing. I mean,
recently, I like the stuff that Dynamite is doing. I think Battlestar Galactica has been very interesting. And I really enjoyed the Highlander.
You know, I actually haven't. I've had to stay out of the Battlestar Galactica stuff because I'm just now getting into the series.
Oh, you got to catch up.
So yeah, I'm behind. Well, see, I run into this thing where I want there to be a couple of seasons at least before I get started. I was that way with the Shield. I
came late to the Shield.
You know, whenever I got into it, I really got into it. So I'm trying to avoid the Battlestar comics right now. Until I get a little further into the show.
What are you watching now? What kind of genre TV and movies have you been watching lately?
I'm kind of a strange TV watcher. I don't actually watch TV per se. I watch shows on DVD a lot. I don't even have an antenna because I'm kind of one of those guys that if I have a TV, it's all I'm going to have. You know, I'm just going to have it on all the time. And I'm going to feel the need to watch it. And so I watch a lot of movies, but I watch a lot of TV on DVD. And right now I'm about two-thirds of the way through Lost Season 2.
Very cool.
Lost may be my favorite show we're on right now.
That's cool.
Before that I was watching Rome, which was it was wonderful.
That's a brilliant show.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of just about all of the HBO shows. You mentioned Deadwood earlier. I think honestly right now for my money, Deadwood and Lost are my two favorite shows. And I'm pretty obsessed with both of those. But I watch Alias. I watch The Shield. I watched all of Buffy and all of Angel.
Cool.
I watched 6 Feet Under, which was possibly the most depressing show I've ever seen.
That's why I stopped watching it.
I wish I had stopped watching it. I loved the first couple of seasons.
Yeah.
It was like my wife and I were watching it, and we just kept talking about it and kept showing it to our friends. We're like, you know, this is probably the best show on TV. Alan Ball just had something, you know, the way that the show dealt with death and yet was so much about life. It was just amazing. It was funny, it was touching, it was sad at times. And then something happened, I guess around season four, and then into the last season, where Alan Ball wanted to have all of his audience kill themselves, and just the last season, we just finished it, and we were like, that was just too much. It was something that I didn't want to see, and I guess good for him if that's what he intended with it, but yeah. So it went from being one of my favorite shows to something I'll probably never watch again. So
fair enough.
You know,
any summer movies stand out for you?
Summer movies. I have a little boy, and he kind of prevents us from going out to see too much stuff. Let's see, what was the last movie I saw? Crank, actually.
What'd you think of Crank?
Oh, it was awesome.
Wasn't that great?
It was kind of everything. It was kind of everything that. You know, it kind of had that classic, a little bit exploitation, a little bit grindhouse, a little bit, you know, just all those great things. You know, it had a real retro feel, and I loved it.
I agree with you. And yet at the same time, felt like Grand Theft Auto come to life, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the movie owes a lot to Jason Statham and kind of what he brought to it. I couldn't imagine anybody else doing what he did on it. But
I think you're right.
It was amazing, and it did have that kind of video game brought to life feel. I'm one of the few people that actually thought that it could have even gone farther.
Well, and I like too, it's blatant commercialism, because that great, you know, transition from different parts of the city, and they were using the Google satellite
thing,
and there's the Google logo right at the bottom of the screen.
Right, right.
I mean, no apologies at all. That was a commercial.
Yeah.
And it cracked me up, but it's okay. I mean, that's the thing.
I don't see a problem with it. I mean, you know, if we can have movies with giant Xbox ads in them and you know, Nike ads and everything, I think that one, you know, concession in a really good movie, I don't mind it at all.
No, and everything that shouldn't have worked did work. It was a dumb plot, dumb characters, dumb dialogue, dumb violence, dumb sex. Didn't matter. Didn't matter.
You know, in the end, I think I was talking to Latour about this. Was just that, you know, you almost don't even need the plot in that movie. I mean, I didn't care at all. You know, it was like this situation where I'm just like, okay, just give me more of what I'm after. The moment you slow down and try to talk about how much he loves this girl and how, you know, and everything, I'm just like, no, just keep going. Just have fun with it and, you know, let it be what it is.
And God, Dwight, was it Dwight Twilley? No, not Dwight Twilley. Who the hell was, who was the doctor?
Oh, geez, man. Dwight Yoakam.
Yeah. Dwight Yoakam, thank you. I was not an old, Dwight Twilley, that's an old 80s reference. See, I'm showing my age again. Yeah, Dwight Yoakam was amazing.
Yeah, no, he's great in everything. I mean, he's just, you know, you watch him in, Sling Blade was one of the movies he was in, and then Panic Room, he was great in that.
That's right.
He was so utterly creepy.
Very cool.
Yeah, he's wonderful in everything he's in.
So, I'm looking over all the different genres that you've been hitting lately. Here we got superheroes, we've got spy action, 40s stuff, western, horror. Is there a genre that you haven't hit yet that you'd like to?
You know, I don't know. I really have a thing for that kind of. I think Clay and Latour actually kind of coined the phrase spy-fi, you know, at least recently. I'd like to do some science fiction slanted stuff.
Okay.
I've kind of got this thing that I've been kind of throwing around in the back of my head. I'm obsessed with the movie Barbarella.
Great movie.
And also Danger Diabolique.
That's hilarious. I bought that this year, and it's a fantastic DVD. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it is wonderful. And for some reason, have you seen CQ?
Which one again?
CQ. Is it Roman Coppola directed?
No, I haven't.
It's a wonderful movie. It's about it's got Jeremy Davies in it. It's about the making of a movie that's very similar to Barbarella or Danger Diabolique. It just had this feel, and I started thinking about it, and I was just like, you know, I would love to do kind of that retro-y sci-fi kind of thing, but just, I don't know, sci-fi is an area that I'd like to mess with a little bit.
That's cool.
I want to do more horror, too. I am a horror nut. I really have an obsession with H.P. Lovecraft, and so I'd like to do something kind of Lovecraftian, horror-based.
Is it tough to pace a sequence in comic form and really achieve a horrific effect?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't do it the same way. I mean, you can't have a jump. You can't... Even if you're doing something and you turn the page, I'm sorry, but I've never jumped when I turn the page of a comic book. I mean, I can be creeped out. I can find something really moody. But jumps don't really exist in comic books. So you have to think of it in different terms. You have to go for atmosphere. You have to go for maybe not necessarily gore, but gore's good too. But, you know, at least something that, you know, looks disturbing is creepy. You know, I think that if you look at, you know, horror books, if you look at some of the Hellblazer stuff, there's a lot of stuff that, if horror is done right, it can be very effective. You just have to understand how to do it. And, you know, I don't know if I can or not, but I'm going to try.
Do you like guys like Ashley Wood and Temple Smith that have been doing, you know, they have that more impressionistic style, it seems.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I really enjoy both of their work. I think that Temple Smith's work on Fell has kind of been the culmination of his work, you know, it's beautiful. It's really got it's a perfect fit for that book, which I know Fell is more, you know, kind of odd crime, but it still has a little bit of a horror feel.
No, I understand.
And Ashley Wood's work, yeah, I've been a huge fan of it. Honestly, I'm more of a fan of his of art books and stuff like that.
Okay.
I love his, you know, I love everything he does, but I own almost every one of his art books, and I think on covers and on his art books and everything, I think that's where he really shines. I think his sense of design and sense of he's just got a wonderful painterly quality to his work. I think sometimes the majority of people aren't going to understand it as well in sequentials, but I think that as single images, it really, really shines.
I love Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah,
and I shouldn't, but I mean, it's just such a beautiful book.
It's definitely. recently. Aren't they doing a huge special edition of that?
I'm sure they are, and they should, because, I mean, really, every image is just gorgeous. And wouldn't you love to own an original? I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, he's actually one of those guys that I keep thinking about, you know, trying to get a hold of his artwork.
We got to go to Australia, I guess.
Well, you know, the nice thing about art dealers, you know, you can just about get anything on the internet now.
That's a good point. Hey, tell me about Narcoleptic Sunday.
Okay, Narcoleptic Sunday is this project that I started on a few years ago. It looks like everything's going through, and I'm going to be doing it with Oni as an original graphic novel, black and white, probably with gray tones.
Okay.
Narcoleptic Sunday is a story about a guy who could solve the murder of the girl he loves if he could just quit falling asleep.
Okay.
I don't necessarily want to call it narcolepsy, but it's you know, he has a severe sleep disorder, and any time that he stops, he falls asleep. And it's just this crazy story about him getting thrown into this world that he doesn't understand at all, and keeps finding these strange clues and various things, and then falls asleep and winds up duct taped chairs, getting beat up by people, or in strange women's apartments, or, you know, just various odd situations.
So I imagine a lot of blank panels will break up a lot of the sequences.
Yeah. We kind of figured out. I'm writing it, but I'm not drawing this, which is kind of strange. But it's an experiment with something I wanted to do. I'm actually working on it with a local artist called Brian Koshak.
Okay.
And he really hasn't done any professional work before. He's got this insane fun style. It's like if Philip Bond and Paul Pope had a baby. I kind of guess that's kind of what it would be like.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just a strange. It's got a little bit of European slant. It's very linear, very shape oriented. It's just crazy stuff, but it's definitely fun. And I wrote the thing over the course of a Christmas. I got snowed in at my in-laws and didn't have anything else to do and wrote it and really just had a blast doing it. It came out. It's basically, I think, about 178 pages.
Wow.
And I wrote it in the course of a few days, and which could be a good thing, could be a bad thing, but I just had a blast with it, and I really don't even know where it came from, honestly.
Do you envision doing any art for it at all for the trade?
You know, I might do a couple pinups or something like
okay.
that for it. I really enjoy what Brian's doing so much that whenever we even talked about doing like some sort of a jam for the cover or me doing the cover or something like that, I just don't want to get in his way at all. I think that he's somebody that's going to shine. I think he has a very, very interesting indie sensibility. It's something that's unique, and he's got a lot of talent. And I, you know, people know me as an artist, but I would just like to do the writing on this and let a very talented guy shine as much as possible.
That's cool. And once this gets released, do you have the writer's bug now? Are there other ideas that are brewing?
You know, there's other things. The strange thing about it is I've actually written a couple of things, and some of them work, some of them don't. I'm not going to claim to be a brilliant writer at all. I enjoy the process. I enjoy telling stories. I consider myself a storyteller.
Sure.
More than anything, you know, but I think that there are things that definitely that I'm probably going to collaborate on, maybe co-write with people in the future. And I'm not going to, you know, say no that I'm not going to write anything else. But for now, I'm just going to concentrate on my artwork as much as possible, and you know, see what happens.
Well, we've enjoyed what we've seen so far, Jer. I mean, I love Battle Hymn, and Leading Man has been excellent, and really looking forward to Iron Man and Captain America, and I hope that opens the door and a lot of people suddenly take notice of what Oni and Image fans have known for a while when it comes to your stuff, and IDW fans as well. So congrats on what we've seen, and we look forward to more coming up.
Well, thank you.
Always great talking to writer-artist Jeremy Hahn. Make sure you check out projects like The Leading Man from Oni Press, still coming out. Also in just a couple months, Captain America and Iron Man, the Civil War one-shot from Marvel Comics. And look in the trades department for things like Battle Hymn and Desperado's Band of Gold. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Keep coming back to Word Balloon for more updates on upcoming episodes. And don't forget, if you ever have any questions about me or the website, you can always reach me at john@wordballoon.com. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2006.